Part 5. Replicating Excellence with NLP. Chapter 16 explains some of the key aspects of the NLP modeling methodology and how to use the techniques covered in this audiobook when modeling excellence. It also briefly describes how to identify and use a particular aspect of people's thought processes known as strategies. Chapter 16. Modeling. How to replicate excellence at work. Don't reinvent the wheel, just realign it. Anthony J. D'Angelo, author, educational entrepreneur. Why reinvent the wheel is a phrase often used in business. If the processes or tasks you require are done really well by colleagues or elsewhere, you can use a methodology developed in the NLP field to replicate the excellence. This is known as modeling, which is one of the three key benefits of NLP. See Chapter 1. Similarly, if you can do a particular activity excellently in one context and would like to do so in another, you can use the NLP modeling process to help you replicate your own excellence. This chapter presents only some key elements of modeling within the context of the other chapters of this book. Why is modeling so useful at work? Modeling can help organizations to keep their performance in line with or ahead of that of their competitors, and it can help to improve individual and team performances in areas such as problem solving, creativity, business process design, presentations, selling, recruitment. Modeling can help you to learn far more quickly than if you attempted to learn without the modeling framework. At an organizational level, this reduces the time required for training. Key concepts and background. One of the NLP presuppositions is that if someone in a broadly similar situation to yours can do something, then you can learn to do it. Modeling excellence leads to improved performance, as mentioned in Chapter 3. This chapter talks about how to do this. Pareto's Law, named after the Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto, states that 80% of results come from 20% of effort, or in the workplace, 20% of the people. The co-developers of NLP, Bandler and Grinder, wanted to find out what was the difference that made the difference between excellent performance and merely good performance. Initially, they studied and modeled excellent communication skills found in leading therapists. Since then, they and many other NLP professionals have modeled a wide variety of business and non-business skills. Though it might be possible to mimic the physical activities that are done by excellent presenters, engineers, or managers simply by observing them, a key belief in NLP is that what happens inside the minds of excellent performers is the difference that makes the difference. An overview of the modeling process. At its simplest, modeling can be broken down into the following key steps. 1. Find someone, an expert, who is excellent at something you want to excel at or replicate. 2. Find out the expert's internal processes, such as their beliefs, metaprograms in the context, and values. You could use the neurological levels model to find out their thoughts and feelings about the task they excel at. Eliciting their submodalities could also be useful. The sections headed Finding Experts and Gaining the Information discuss this in more detail, including what to do if you do not have access to the expert. 3. Where possible, observe them doing the task. That is, the actual behaviors, because people who are excellent at something are often not always fully aware of exactly what they are doing at certain points in the process. 4. Find out their internal states, that is, how they are feeling when they do the task. 5. Adopt their ways and strategies of thinking and feeling, steps 2, 3, and 4, refining them until you are able to replicate or even improve on their results. Strategies are considered in more detail at the end of this chapter. Depending on the amount of time and resources available for the modeling project, you would want to make at least significant improvements in your results. 6. Train other people to adopt this model and hence improve their results. Some considerations when modeling. Here are some areas to consider before and during a modeling project. This section is written as though you are the decision maker in this regard for your organization. Your desired outcome. The first principle for success, Chapter 3, emphasizes the importance of knowing what you want from the modeling project. This will influence, or may be constrained by, the amount of time and resources, money, skills, and people available to do the project. Tip 16.1. It is important to be specific about what you want to model and, if necessary, chunk the process down into details. For example, modeling an excellent salesperson could be useful. It would probably be more useful to model specific aspects of the sales process from different experts, such as sales research, canvassing, appointment making, initial meetings, handling objections, closing the sale, and relationship management after the sale. Available resources. Following on from the previous point, a full-scale modeling project can be time-consuming and labor-intensive. How do the costs compare to the likely benefits? Do you or the team have the necessary modeling skills, or would you need assistance from consultants experienced in NLP-based modeling? As a listener of this audiobook, even if you have not been formally NLP trained, you will be able to gain a certain amount of information about experts' values, beliefs, and metaprograms, as well as ask relevant questions, use the neurological levels model, and have an understanding of state and its importance in doing a task well. Finding experts. Finding people who are truly excellent and who are willing and able to devote the time to be modeled can sometimes be challenging. If you are modeling in-house experts, for example, salespeople, though you might be able to insist or persuade the experts to take part, there is no guarantee that they will willingly do so. They might wish to keep their secrets. If you are modeling people who you do not have access to, you will need to make the most of available information, while recognizing that the project might not yield the same level of results as other forms of modeling projects. See the following section, Gaining the Information. You would also ideally have several experts so that you could identify what is essential and what is idiosyncratic. You might also want to have a group of models who are good but not excellent, against whom to compare what the expert does. Please be sensitive about how you explain the project to the comparison group. Gaining the information. There are several possible methods, such as interviews, structured, semi-structured, informal, direct observation, and indirect observation, videos. Although it is clearly more effective to be able to model someone who you have access to and who is willing to be modeled, in his series of books called Strategies of Genius, Robert Diltz did extensive modeling projects on people who are deceased, such as Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Walt Disney, and Aristotle. Though, clearly, Diltz was unable to gain information in the ways mentioned in this section, he was able to analyze quotations and anecdotes to gain insights into the thinking processes of these geniuses, and then demonstrate how these could be used to develop and improve creativity and ability to solve problems. Using the information. Ideally, you would consider how you would use the information for you personally or for your organization before starting the project. Possible uses include improving recruitment and staff training and performance. Story 16.1. The situation mentioned in Story 15.1 happened during a modeling project. Essentially, I and my colleagues looked at what was the difference between effective salespeople and those who were not so successful for a particular organization. The purpose was to create an easy-to-use model of what made a successful salesperson in that company, so that the company could recruit accordingly. We each interviewed a selected group, asking them questions about each of the different neurological levels, as well as eliciting values and criteria equivalents, metaprograms, and key beliefs, and also using the perceptual positions approach to see how they saw other stakeholders. Certain clear patterns emerged, which helped the company to recruit and promote more effectively. Once you have decided the purpose of the modeling project, follow the 6 steps mentioned in the section, An Overview of the Modeling Process, listed about 2 minutes into this chapter. Strategies. Step 5 of the modeling process mentions strategies. Strategy in NLP has a slightly different meaning from that in everyday use. Strategies can be a complex NLP topic which is best understood by means of a live training course. The following is a very brief summary, so if you want to find out more, refer to the Resources for Further Learning section in the companion PDF. From an NLP perspective, a strategy is a sequence of information gathered externally using the main representational systems and processed internally, also using the main representational systems, that leads to a specific result. People have strategies for almost everything they do. For example, making buying decisions, deciding when it's time to close a sale, and becoming motivated to take action. Why are strategies useful? Some of the benefits of knowing about strategies are: you can learn how to model your own excellence. For example, how do you make excellent decisions? You can learn how to understand other people's decision-making processes. This can help you to influence them. In addition, NLP strategies can be used to help people change their own strategies if they are not helpful. For example, if someone finds making decisions difficult, or to create a strategy if someone doesn't have an existing one. However, it is important to note that these topics are outside the scope of this audiobook and require NLP practitioner-level training. Identifying strategies. For the purpose of explaining strategies in the context of modeling at work, let's use the example of making purchasing decisions in order to describe the principles. Most people have a process they repeatedly go through to make decisions to buy something, known in NLP as their decision-making strategy. So, when you make a decision about, for example, which briefcase to buy, you will go through a sequence that will include some or all of the following, in no particular order. You might wish to refer to representational systems in Chapter 6. Looking at the briefcase, visual, external. Discussing it with the salesperson, auditory, external. Touching, using, trying it, kinesthetic, external. Checking that it meets your requirements, for example, size, color, number of compartments, price, brand, etc. Auditory, digital. Visualizing how it would work when you use it, visual, internal constructed. Remembering what your old briefcase looked like, visual, internal remembered. Imagining what people would say about it if you bought it, auditory, internal constructed. Remembering what people have said about your old briefcase, auditory, internal remembered. How you would feel about buying it, kinesthetic, internal. As an example, someone's decision-making strategy could be: 1. See it, visual, external. 2. Check that it has all the features and is the right price, auditory, digital. 3. Pick it up, hold it, and carry it, kinesthetic, external. 4. Imagine what you would look like carrying it into a business meeting, visual, internal constructed. 5. Repeat the process with some other briefcases. 6. Check again the price and the guarantee, auditory, digital. 7. Feel good about buying it, kinesthetic, internal. 8. Buy it. Exercise 16.1. Remember times when you made decisions that you were happy with, and identify the sequence you usually go through, based on the previous bullet points, to make these good decisions. This will provide you with a template that you can use for making decisions in the future, that is, your decision-making strategy. Please ensure that you choose times when you were happy with the decision you made, and, ideally, when you were alone. You want to identify your strategy, not someone else's. It is worth being aware that making decisions can often be broken down into the following components. 1. Being motivated to actually make a decision, to buy a briefcase. This will take a period of time. From an NLP perspective, it is considered to be a separate strategy that takes place before you actually go into the shop or website to buy. This stage usually includes choosing the specification or criteria for the product or service you are buying. 2. Selecting or deciding on which briefcase you will buy when you are in the shop or online. 3. Becoming convinced that this briefcase is right for you before choosing. You might find that you repeat the process detailed in the previous point several times or over a period of time before deciding, for example, testing 4 briefcases. This is step 5 in the briefcase example earlier. This often links to a person's convincer demonstration metaprogram. Sometimes a fourth component relates to how someone becomes reassured that it was a good decision or purchase. Ideally, this would take place before the decision has been finally made. For example, some people might discuss the purchase with a friend before the end of the refund period. Using the briefcase example, step 6, and possibly step 7, could be the reassurance element. Where decisions are made by groups within organizations, similar principles will usually apply. Decision-making processes and strategies might vary depending on the importance of the decision or the cost of the product. Applications of decision strategies at work. Even with this brief introduction to strategies, there are several ways that you can use this information in business. making decisions. Identify your own decision-making strategy so that you can replicate it and use it as a checklist. Story 16.2. I taught this material to a coaching client who, as an entrepreneur, wanted to make consistently good decisions and stop making occasional bad decisions. He identified his effective decision-making strategy and also the process he followed when he made poor decisions. And, having recognized the difference, he was able to ensure that he followed the effective model every time. Selling. If appropriate and possible, casually ask prospects about things they have bought, such as car, watch, clothes, rings, and how they decided that the item was for them. This will give you an indication of their decision-making strategy. As much as possible, present your offering in the representational system sequence that matches their strategy. This might not necessarily lead to the prospects agreeing to buy your product if it is not right for them. It will, however, increase the likelihood of their making a faster decision. Most sales professionals prefer a quick decision from prospects so that even if it is a no, they can quickly move on to the next prospect. Influencing colleagues. If you want a colleague to make a decision, as with the previous point, present information about your offering in the representational system sequence that matches their strategy. Part 6. Applying NLP at work. Chapter 17 looks at 16 areas of work covered in Chapter 1 and summarizes the main NLP techniques to use in each area. It is intended as a quick reminder to help you plan and prepare for these types of work activity. Chapter 17. Applications of NLP. Reference guide when using NLP for specific work activities. In most of the chapters in the first four parts of this audiobook, you learned about a specific NLP topic in each chapter and how to apply it in various situations in business and the workplace. Chapter 16 covered how to use some of the NLP techniques to model excellence. In this chapter, we will approach this from the opposite direction. That is, we will take each of the 16 work areas and activities referred to in Chapter 1 and briefly look at which of the NLP tools and techniques would be useful for each, together with any other relevant guidelines. The chapter is intended mainly as a reference guide when planning or preparing for any of these activities. The work activities have been divided into three categories: internal communications, external communications, and work processes, in order to assist you. Internal communications with staff and colleagues. 1. Management of staff. 2. Team building. 3. Leadership. 4. Human resources, recruitment and interviewing. 5. Training. 6. Coaching. External communications with customers, clients, and suppliers. 7. Sales, business development and account management. 8. Marketing and advertising. 9. Liaison with clients, customers, patients, and other service users. 10. Procurement. 11. Negotiation. 12. Presentations. 13. Resolving conflicts and misunderstandings. Work processes. 14. Consultancy, including change management. 15. Improved decision making. 16. Creative problem solving. The foundations. The information in chapters 2 to 7 represents the communication, goal setting, and mindset fundamentals that will be useful in all work situations. They are NLP presuppositions, the principles for success, being at cause. These first three points make up the mindset for success. The NLP communication model, setting well-formed, smarter goals, sensory acuity, rapport, representational systems, predicates, I patterns, language, the hierarchy of ideas, linguistic presuppositions, small words with big meanings, abstract language, the Milton model, specific language and power questions, the meta model, and metaphors, stories, and analogies. You have covered these, so you now understand their application in all the situations described so far. So, when discussing the 16 activities, I will mention these again only when they are particularly helpful or relevant. In addition, being in a resourceful state, anchoring, chapter 10, and/or altering your submodalities to have a positive internal representation of an event or situation, chapter 9, might be useful to you. Again, because you now understand these techniques, they will not be mentioned unless they are particularly relevant. Overview of the 16 activities. For each activity, the NLP techniques and interventions that are particularly applicable and the relevant chapter will be mentioned. This will be available in a companion PDF to the audio program and be done in bullet point format wherever possible to make it easy for you to refer to, because you already have listened to and therefore understand the relevant information. You might, of course, wish to quickly refresh your memory by revisiting the relevant chapter. There is some duplication because elements of some work activities are similar to those of others, for example, procurement and negotiation. The duplication will also enable you in the future to look at any of the 16 topics without referring to others. 1. Management of Staff. Values, Chapter 14. At the annual appraisal for each staff member, set the scene before doing the values elicitation process, steps 1 through 5, and eliciting the criteria equivalents for all of the values. After the appraisal, keep your word by doing whatever you can as manager to help each member of your staff to have their values fulfilled, subject to the constraints that you would already have explained to your staff, for example, budgetary limits. Goal setting, Chapter 4. Set well-formed or smarter goals at the annual appraisal time and possibly at project initiation meetings. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Identify some of the key metaprograms for each employee so that you have a greater understanding of how they think and respond under different scenarios and of how to influence them accordingly. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. Where relevant, before meeting individual members of staff, do the perceptual positions exercise to gain an appreciation of their point of view. If a staff member wants or needs to gain appreciation into another perspective, for example, if there is a conflict with a colleague, take the staff member through the perceptual positions exercise. Reframing, Chapter 12, and Changing Beliefs Conversationally, Chapter 13. Being able to change a member of staff's mindset about a particular situation will be useful at times. For example, feeling negative toward a particular work challenge or colleague. 2. Team Building. Goal Setting, Chapter 4. Agree on a well-formed, smarter goal that the whole team can work toward. Values, Chapter 14. If the team is ready for it, that is, if the team is already functioning well, ask the team to list their own values and the criteria equivalents and share them with other team members so that every member has a greater understanding of how to motivate and avoid demotivating each other. If team members have been suitably trained, they could do the elicitation process on each other and give feedback to the group. Also, if the team were ready for it, you could elicit team values and the criteria equivalents in the group so that the team would have a set of values that it collectively created, which would probably enhance team effectiveness and cohesion. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Explain to the group about some key relevant metaprograms so that they have an understanding that their colleagues might be different and of how to communicate to get the best from each other. For example, two team members' knowledge that one of them is toward and the other is away from, direction filter, might help them understand each other's responses and see the respective benefits, rather than possibly feeling frustrated. Neurological Levels, Chapter 8. Consider the team's purpose and mission. Create a team identity. Agree on the team's values and identify suitable capabilities and behaviors and how they would like the environment to be. 3. Leadership. Neurological Levels, Chapter 8. The leadership exercise, exercise 8.2 in the companion PDF, is a really useful way to gain a greater perspective on your own leadership role. Also, with the abstract language in Chapter 7, being able to clearly know and articulate the organization's mission is essential for a business leader. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. According to stories I have heard on training courses, before making important leadership-related decisions, Andrew Carnegie would sit in the seats of the other board members, when the boardroom was empty, and see the situation from the perspective of each director before making his decision. Even if this is not physically possible, you can still do the perceptual positions process in a different location, creating several position twos, one for each of the main people or groups affected by the decision. Reframing, Chapter 12. At times, leaders will need to put a positive spin on situations by turning a seemingly negative situation, such as poor financial results or the closing of a subsidiary, into a more positive one. 4. Human Resources, Recruiting, and Interviewing. Neurological Levels, Chapter 8. Be aware of how the HR policy can support and align with the organization's objectives and mission, identity, etc. In particular, ensure that the recruitment policy aligns with the neurological levels elements and provide training to ensure that the competencies, that is, capabilities and behaviors, are appropriate to meet the organization's needs. Values, Chapter 14. Eliciting the values of the candidate and comparing them with the values required by the role, and indeed the organization's values, will help you recruit more effectively. A phrase often used by HR professionals when discussing recruitment is, recruit for attitude, that is, values and beliefs, train for skills. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. When seeking to fill a vacancy, do a metaprogram profile of the position, listing the key metaprogram filters that will be useful, your preferred option on the spectrum, and acceptable alternatives for each of the filters. You would then use relevant influencing language in job adverts and elicit the key metaprograms of the candidates during the interview. Anchoring, Chapter 10. Using your resource anchor will help you be in a positive state for the interview, whether as interviewer or interviewee. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. As a candidate or interviewer, going through the perceptual positions exercise will help you prepare for the kind of questions an interviewer or candidate is likely to ask and for the kind of information you will be expected to know. 5. Training. When running a training course, it is essential to accommodate the different learning styles of the delegates. Though there are different theories of learning styles, one that many NLP trainers have found to be particularly useful is based on Bernice McCarthy's Learning Styles Inventory. Essentially, it states that people have a preferred learning style, and that 35% need or prefer to know why the material is important, 22% need or prefer to know the information, that is, the what, 18% need or prefer to learn by doing, that is, the how, 25% need or prefer to learn by self-discovery, that is, exploring what-if scenarios. This is known as the 4-MAT system, in which people learn based on all of these four concepts. Although this is not a specific NLP technique, it is taught in many business-related NLP courses and is used as a required structure for presentations in many certified NLP trainers' training courses. In order to run an effective training segment, it is extremely useful to structure it as follows. Give an overview and very brief introduction of the topic to be covered. Why? Explain, from the trainee's perspective, why this information is so useful to them. You may need to use perceptual positions thinking, that is, positions 2 and 3, to do this. This grabs their attention and engages them. For example, if you are training a group of newly promoted managers in appraisal skills, you would probably mention how doing excellent appraisals will boost staff performance and hence reflect well on them as managers, enhancing their own career prospects. What? Present the information you want to give them, such as relevant history, theories, facts, figures, processes, and demonstrations. How? Although the process is explained and possibly demonstrated during the what segment, the how segment gives the delegates the opportunity to try it in practice and is the active learning segment. What if? This is where you explore what the delegates learned during the exercise and how they can use this knowledge in real situations at work. I also ask delegates to keep a learning log of the key points they have learned, how they are going to use the material, when and with whom. In doing this, delegates are future pacing themselves, putting the material into practice so that the training becomes even more useful. Representational Systems, Chapter 6. Wherever possible, present information using the four main representational systems, that is, visual, Use a combination of videos, flip charts, PowerPoint, and diagrams. I personally prefer using flip charts to PowerPoint, writing neatly and using colors and diagrams if possible, which are then used as wall charts so that people have a visual reminder throughout the course. Slides are only temporary. Auditory. There is a natural auditory element to training because you will be speaking. Allow and encourage appropriate verbal interactions and discussion. Consider using music during break times or during certain exercises. Kinesthetic. Wherever possible, allow delegates to do exercises or tasks that are relevant to the topic. Also, writing their learning log is to some degree a kinesthetic activity. Auditory digital. Provide facts and figures where appropriate. Anchoring, Chapter 10, Submodalities, Chapter 9, and Changing Beliefs, Chapter 13. Experienced trainers usually know how to manage their own state. Sometimes non-trainers with a particular specialism are asked to run training segments and might feel somewhat nervous and/or have a negative belief about the event. Use your resource anchor, submodalities of positive experience, and change any limiting beliefs to help you be in the right mindset to deliver the session. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. If you are not sure what the audience wants or what questions they might have, because, for example, you do not have the opportunity to speak with the delegates before the segment, then put yourself into positions 2 and 3 to gain some insight into this. 6. Coaching. Coaching as a profession has expanded greatly since the beginning of the new millennium. There are numerous courses, books, and professional coaching associations, and, increasingly, managers in the workplace are being encouraged to adopt a coaching style of management. One particularly useful coaching model is known as the GROW, or GROW model. See Resources for Further Learning. This stands for Goal. What do you want to achieve? What do you want from the coaching relationship and/or session? R. Reality. What is the current situation? Where are you now in relation to achieving your goal? O. Options. What options do you have to move from where you are to where you want to be to achieve your goal? W. What and when? What will you do? When will you do it? The foundations referred to earlier in this chapter are relevant when coaching, and in particular, communication, Chapter 2. Explain the communication model to the person being coached if they have communication challenges in their work. The Mindset for Business Success, Chapter 3. I explain cause and effect to every client at the start of the first session because it is far easier to coach someone if they accept this principle. I strongly recommend that you do this. Also, you can mention any relevant NLP presuppositions during the coaching session and inform the person being coached of the principles for success as part of your coaching. Goal Setting, Chapter 4. This forms the G and the R of the GROW model. It would usually be covered in some depth in the initial session so that you know what the person being coached wants to achieve. In subsequent sessions, you would usually only want to know what the person being coached wants from the session rather than going through the whole goal-setting process again. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. You can use metaprograms to gain a greater understanding of the person being coached and to use the relevant influencing language. The options segment of the GROW model usually forms the bulk of the coaching session. The NLP techniques covered in Part 3 and Chapter 14 help you to build on the O to help the person being coached overcome obstacles and to move onward faster than they otherwise would. You can use the power questions available in the companion PDF to this audiobook to be specific about what the person being coached will do and when. The W. 7. Sales, Business Development, and Account Management. Rapport, Chapter 5. This is particularly important in selling, as generally people buy only from people they trust and feel comfortable with, which is usually the result of the salesperson having built rapport with the customer. Questioning Skills, Chapter 7. There are several models and methods for selling. Most, if not all of them, relying on the ability of the salesperson to elicit information about factors such as the current situation, any problems the organization is experiencing, the implications of these problems, including what it is costing the client or prospect to have the problem or not to have the solution. The procurement process with the organization, including who or who else is involved in the decision-making. Values, Chapter 14. It is essential to find out what the client or prospect wants from a supplier and what's important to them or what they look for in the product or service. The values elicitation process and criteria equivalence will help you immensely. Also, if you know exactly what the client or prospect wants or needs, and you can demonstrate how you can meet or even exceed these needs, then it ceases to become selling and becomes more about serving, which is what great salesmanship is really about. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Find out some of the client's or prospect's key metaprogram filters in order to be able to adjust your sales pitch to suit the specific client or clients you're dealing with. Handling objections and reframing, Chapter 12, and possibly changing beliefs, Chapter 13. It is rare for clients or prospects not to have objections, so being able to handle objections is a key part of selling. If by some chance you have doubts about your abilities as a salesperson, review Chapter 13. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. Being able to second position a client or prospect before, during, or after meetings will lead to greater awareness of their perspective and aid the sales process. Similarly, being able to take a third position will help give you insights into ways to move forward. The Disney process for creative solutions could be useful. That is, he would take his staff to the Dreamer Room to think of all the wackiest ideas they could come up with, the Critic Room to think of why all these ideas might not work, and the Realist Room to pull together the ideas from the other rooms. Knowing your purpose and mission, Chapter 8. While doing the sales modeling project referred to in Story 15.1 and in Story 15.2, I noticed that the successful salespeople had a very clear sense of who else, that is, mission and purpose, they were serving in the course of their sales role. It wasn't just the individual customer or their own family. These successful salespeople knew how their product benefited a wider group, such as the clients of their clients, the whole business community, and even society as a whole. This gave them added motivation to succeed and a sense of congruence with what they were doing, which would have been perceived by clients. Submodalities, Chapter 9, and Anchoring, Chapter 10. Adjusting your submodalities might be useful before business meetings with important clients or prospects, and you can use your resource anchor before or during meetings. When asking for the sale, it is generally useful to keep quiet. Nerves can tempt people to speak, so firing your calm and relaxed anchor will help. Also, it might be useful to anchor relevant states in prospects or clients, or use spatial anchors to improve your communication. Decision-making strategies, Chapter 16. When possible, identify the decision-making strategy of your prospect and present information to them in the order and sequence in which they like to receive the information. 8. Marketing and advertising. Representational systems and predicates, Chapter 6. When advertising, if appropriate, you can use the information in Chapter 6 to engage the senses of the target clients or customers, including using predicates from all four main representational systems. Anchoring, Chapter 10. Seek to create an association between the product or service you are selling and good feelings for the client. Such feelings could include feeling successful, sexy, amused, and upbeat. Values, Chapter 14. When doing market research, asking questions to elicit and rank values could be useful. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Use the appropriate influencing language for the key metaprograms that relate to your product or service. For example, insurance products are inherently away-from products, that is, minimizing or reducing liabilities in the event of a problem. Also, the relationship filter mentions that most people prefer sameness with exception, and hence prefer words such as improved rather than brand new for most goods. Launches of technology goods may be exceptions to this, where businesses might be seeking to attract early adopters, that is, people who will seek the latest gadget, based on Professor Rogers' model explained in Diffusions of Innovation. 9. Liaison with clients, customers, patients, and other service users. Rapport, Chapter 5. This is particularly important in client liaison or customer liaison roles, as generally client satisfaction is enhanced when they deal with customer liaison staff they trust and feel comfortable with, which is usually the result of staff having built rapport with the customer. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. This will help you to prepare for conversations and see the client's point of view. Metaprograms, Chapter 15, and Values, Chapter 14. Elicit or listen out for key metaprograms and values to be able to influence more effectively. Handling Objections, Chapter 12. Even if they are mild objections or complaints, the processes described in Chapter 12 will help you to reframe them. Chunking, Chapter 7. Chunking up could help you to understand what the customer really wants. Chunking down could help you to be specific or get the specific information required to help the customer. Chunking laterally could help you reach creative solutions to challenges. Please also see Sales, Point 7, and Resolving Conflicts, Point 13. 10. Procurement. Procurement is, in many respects, the flip side of the sales coin and will have a negotiation element, Point 11. Although it is often assumed that the client has all the power, this may not always be the case. It is also important to remember that procurement departments usually have internal clients, that is, the departments on whose behalf they are procuring. The information about the topics that follow can be used in such situations. One of my master practitioner students had a career in procurement. She said that NLP helped her to recognize what the salespeople, who often have significant amounts of NLP-based training, whether or not it is branded as NLP, were doing during the sales and negotiation process, especially their use of language patterns. This enabled her, for example, to counter some of their statements or probe further using power questions. The following points assume that you are sourcing from an organization that has a similar degree of power to your organization. Though it is possible for powerful organizations to bully suppliers, it is probably not a useful tactic for long-term relationship building or for procuring from equally powerful or more powerful suppliers. Rapport, Chapter 5. This will help you to negotiate more effectively, see Point 11, and perhaps gain preferential treatment in the event of, for example, supply problems. Power Questions, Chapter 7. This will enable you to ask detailed questions, for example, to find out whether the supplier really does have the expertise and experience you are looking for, or whether they are being creative with the truth. Values, Chapter 14. Finding out what is important to the supplier, apart from simply selling, can be useful. For example, if they want to gain a foothold in a particular sector, and if your organization is in that sector, you could use it as a bargaining tool for better service or price. Also, you can use the values elicitation process to know exactly what you want from the product or service you are procuring. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. During conversations, knowing the profile of the sales representative could help you during the procurement process. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. Being able to second position a supplier before, during, or after meetings will lead to greater awareness of their perspective and aid the procurement process. Similarly, being able to take a third position will help give you insights into ways to move forward. Handling Objections and Reframing, Chapter 12. Just as clients might have objections, suppliers might have objections to your proposals, so being able to handle objections is a key part of procurement. 11. Negotiation. Negotiations could take place in a traditional selling or procurement process. Please review points 7 and 10 for tips. Apart from these situations, negotiations could take place in a variety of other situations, such as trade union pay negotiations, remuneration when you join a company, get promoted, or are at an appraisal, or deciding which members of staff can take days off at Christmas in a particular year. Rapport, Chapter 5. In general, having the capability to create a feeling of trust and cooperation, especially at tense moments, will help you to negotiate more effectively. Hierarchy of Ideas, Chapter 7. Being able to chunk up to agree on a common objective is usually an essential part of negotiations, and to be able to chunk laterally can help to generate creative solutions or overcome impasses. One negotiation model often taught in NLP is to be able to chunk up high enough until both parties agree, and then chunk down only as quickly as you can continue to maintain agreement and rapport. Power Questions, Chapter 7. Asking questions to uncover details. For example, to find out what specifically the counterparty wants or what exactly is being offered and expected of you. For example, if you are being promoted. Submodalities, Chapter 9. If you feel uncomfortable about negotiating with someone more senior than you at work, you might want to adjust your submodalities relating to that person to shrink them down to size. Anchoring, Chapter 10. As with the previous point, you could use your resource anchor to feel resourceful, powerful, confident, etc. during the negotiation. Being able to maintain resourceful states, such as calmness and strength, will almost certainly be useful during negotiations, and being able to anchor them and then fire states in your counterparty could be useful. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. This is an essential tool. Putting yourself in positions 2 and 3 before the negotiations will help inform you of the negotiation position and strategies of your counterparty. Sometimes it will be useful to create several position 2s, for example, different departments or individuals within your counterparty's organization, or your boss and his boss if you are going for a promotion. Perceptual positions will also be useful during the negotiation, perhaps by taking a brief pause to consider another perspective. Values, Chapter 14. Understanding what is important to your counterparty regarding the topic being negotiated is essential. Though they may not be willing to divulge this or even give you misinformation in a combative negotiation, you can use sensory acuity to notice whether certain topics or words seem to be more important than others, and use this information, even if it is more of a guess, to test whether your ideas are correct. In a more congenial negotiation, for example, regarding your pay and workload, finding out what is important to your boss or staff member will be really useful. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Patterns 1 through 7 are likely to be particularly important, and possibly the convincer patterns, 13 and 14. These will help you to present your arguments and suggestions in a way that is most likely to fit the needs and wants of the counterparty. Handling objections and reframing, Chapter 12, and possibly changing beliefs, Chapter 13. As with the selling and procurement, in a formal negotiation situation, being able to reframe and handle objections will be essential. In a more informal negotiation, such as having received a job offer, it might be less important. 12. Presentations. Representational systems and predicates, Chapter 6. Remember to engage the senses, including the use of predicates from all four main representational systems. If, due to the nature of the topic, the audience is likely to show a preference for a particular representational system, concentrate a little more on that one compared to how you would if you were presenting to a more general audience. Visual. For example, show diagrams, videos, use PowerPoint or slides. Use flip charts, neat writing, possibly different colored pens, and if possible, stick them to the wall during the presentation. Keep information on slides, etc. to a minimum, and make sure that it is legible to people in the back row. Auditory. A presentation will almost always include words, so this will appeal to the auditory needs of the audience. If appropriate, use music or interviews or videos with sound. Allow the audience the opportunity to speak, either to each other or to ask questions. To some extent, this latter element could be classed as kinesthetic, as it engages the audience and enables their participation. Kinesthetic. As well as the previous point, if appropriate, allow and encourage the audience to do an activity that relates to your topic. At the very least, make reference to and/or ask them to consider, and possibly discuss in small groups, how the topic could affect them. Auditory digital. Provide relevant facts, figures, and evidence to support your points. Submodalities, Chapter 9. If presenting is not an activity that appeals to you, you could alter your submodalities for presenting to be similar to those for a work activity that you do like. Anchoring, Chapter 10. Use your resource anchor before and during the presentation if necessary. You can use spatial anchors for different points of the stage and elicit states in the audience by using stories and metaphors, Chapter 7, and anchoring certain states in the audience. See Story 10.1 about anchoring laughter with gestures. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. You can use this to help you prepare the content of the presentation to suit the audience's wants and needs. Position 2 would be the audience, and position 3 would be a neutral observer. You could create several position 2s if there are different groups in the audience. You can also use perceptual positions to help you prepare for questions that the audience might ask. Reframing and handling objections, Chapter 12, and possibly changing beliefs, Chapter 13. Depending on the nature of the presentation, there might be objections or challenging questions from the audience, or you might be delivering negative information, for example, bad financial results. Having the ability to put a positive spin at the right time or times will help your presentation. Language, Chapter 7. Sometimes being able to chunk up to a larger concept will enable you to handle objections and avoid getting bogged down in details. Being able to ask probing questions can engage or challenge the audience. Using stories and metaphors will help explain complex topics or illustrate points you want to make. Telling a story of how someone else or another company overcame a problem using the solution you are proposing can also help minimize resistance to your ideas. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. Many of the metaprograms, especially 2 through 7, are on a spectrum. It will almost certainly be useful if you use language that appeals to both ends of the spectrum. Examples were given in some of the tips in Chapter 15. The frame of reference filter will be particularly relevant to you when presenting to formal audiences and/or to audiences who don't know you. Given that approximately 1/3 of people in the workplace are internal or mainly internal, their natural tendency will be to decide for themselves who they will take seriously. So make sure that you introduce yourself and mention your credentials or relevant experience. In addition to these topics, here are some other elements of successful presentations. Prepare fully. Know your subject well, rehearse if appropriate, and get honest feedback before and after the presentation. If appropriate, use the 4-MAT system referred to in the segment on training earlier in this chapter, point 5. Remember that questions from the audience are simply questions, not heckles. Often they are simply requests for clarification or an explanation. Occasionally, the person asking the question might have an ulterior motive, such as point scoring, showing how knowledgeable they are, or simply having a desire for attention. Even if a member of the audience is appearing to be a nuisance, remember the NLP presupposition that everyone is doing the best they can with their current level of awareness, while you respond appropriately. Tip 17.1. View questions as an opportunity for you to clarify and give additional useful information to the whole audience, not just to the person asking the question. Also, when you have finished, ask the questioner if that answers their question, and use your sensory acuity to check whether yes really means yes. Check all technology prior to the presentation, and, where practical, have a backup plan. If it is a formal presentation, if possible, visit or see the venue beforehand. This will help you visualize the presentation. Many of my clients do the mental rehearsal exercise to help prepare for their presentation. If you cannot see the venue before the day itself, arrive early to give yourself time to look at the venue and mentally rehearse. 13. Resolving conflicts and misunderstandings. Please remember that the following points are suggestions. You will need to use your common sense, as each situation will be different. Also, if the conflict is between two other people, ask yourself whether the conflict is too strong for you to address, given the level of experience you have. Rapport, Chapter 5. This is particularly important, as being out of rapport will probably worsen the situation, whereas being in rapport will help smooth the potentially challenging moments. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. This is probably the key NLP technique to use. being able to see other perspectives before the situation escalates, or once it has become a conflict, will help prevent or resolve the situation. If you are acting as a mediator or coach, you could use the technique with each party separately, and once they have gained insight into the other person's perspective, you could then bring them together to take the situation forward. Values, Chapter 14. Conflicts are often caused by behaviors that transgress someone's values. The neurological levels model explains the link between values and behaviors. If you know what's important to someone and the criteria equivalents, you will already have an idea of what to do and what not to do to prevent conflicts. If a conflict or misunderstanding has arisen, by finding out which values have not been respected, you will be better able to manage or remedy the situation, whether you have been offended or whether you have offended someone else, or if you are coaching one of the parties. Remember, it is possible that the offending party did not realize the impact of their actions and that you might have distorted the meaning of the actual event. See the NLP Communication Model of Chapter 2. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. If you have certain metaprogram preferences that are completely opposite, for example, to those of a colleague, you will probably be seeing a given situation in a very different way. For example, if you are very toward, you may be annoyed at an away-from colleague raising problems and concerns about a project that you think is a good idea. Remember, your colleague may be annoyed at you for being too optimistic. By understanding metaprograms, you will have a better insight into why someone else reacts the way they do, and into some ways to use language to influence them. Anchoring, Chapter 10. Setting up and using a calm or similar anchor will help you be in the right state during the discussion about the situation. 14. Consultancy, including change management. Business consultancy can be used in most work-related activities. This section will cover the most relevant NLP techniques related to improving work processes and business reorganization. Representational systems, Chapter 6. Story 6.2, 12 delegates at a conference advising a manager of a steel factory, describes how representational systems can be used to improve a business process by presenting information in a way that engages the main senses of the attendees. Neurological levels alignment, Chapter 8. The neurological levels model will help you structure the organizational change process, considering the impact of the changes on each neurological level. You can also consider whether the organization is aligned from a neurological levels perspective. For example, does its mission fit with its stated values and skill set, capabilities? And do the behaviors of management reflect the values espoused by management? Also, do all employees know and buy into the organization's mission and vision? Remember the quote from the NASA janitor who said he was helping to build rockets. Values, Chapter 14. Rarely will there be successful organizational change without addressing the organization's values. To some degree, this is covered in the previous point. Perceptual positions, Chapter 11. Consider the perspectives of the various groups affected by the business process or the proposed organizational changes. This might mean that there are several position twos. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. As well as using the relevant influencing language, one particularly important metaprogram in the context of change management and business process consultancy is the relationship filter, sameness and difference. Most people do not like frequent or significant change and might feel uncomfortable about it. Wherever appropriate, remember to use sameness with exception influencing language with people who are at that end of the spectrum, pointing out how much it will be the same except for certain changes or similar to the way it was. You might even want to use terminology such as enhancements rather than change. 15. Decision making. Strategies, Chapter 16. Identify your own decision making strategy and make sure that you have sufficient information and opportunity to follow it. Goal setting, Chapter 4. When making decisions, it is essential to know what you want to achieve so that the choices can be considered in that context. Even if it is not appropriate to create a full, well-formed outcome, many of the goal-setting questions will be relevant to your situation. Depending on the importance of the decision, asking the four ecology questions will be essential. Neurological levels, Chapter 8. as well as asking yourself the four ecology questions, you could consider the impact of the decision choices on each of the levels. Chunking, Chapter 7. Being able to chunk up to decide on the purpose of what it is that you are making a decision about, and being able to chunk down to discuss the details and consequences of the decisions will usually help you to make your decision. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. Being able to put yourself in the shoes of the various parties impacted by the decision will give you additional insight into making the best decision. This is what Carnegie was rumored to have done. This will involve your creating different position twos to represent the relevant parties impacted by the decision. Values, Chapter 14. If you need to make a choice regarding, for example, which computer system to buy, do the full values elicitation process, steps 1 through 5, and if necessary, elicit the criteria equivalents. Compare the alternatives and see which fulfill all the essential values. Refer to Table 14.1 in the companion PDF. 16. Creative Problem Solving. Goal Setting, Chapter 4. At the very least, know broadly what your desired outcome is. If it is relevant to the situation, spend time creating a well-formed, smarter outcome so that you are clear what the solution is aiming for. Lateral Chunking, Chapter 7. Lateral chunking will help you to think outside the box. You might find it useful to chunk up a couple of times before asking for different ways or different examples, the chunking down questions. Small Words with Big Meanings, Chapter 7. Words such as but, however, and although might stifle creative thinking. Similarly, or might limit people to believing that there are only two options, where in reality, there might be many more. Anchoring, Chapter 10. Being in a suitable state, such as creative or energized, might be useful for you and the other people involved in solving the problem. Using suitable music is a useful auditory anchor to create states. Perceptual Positions, Chapter 11. There are a couple of ways to use this technique. One option is to do a similar process for the one used by Walt Disney. Alternatively, use position 2 to represent the time in the future when you have resolved the problem, and position 3 to notice how you did it. Reframing, Chapter 12. Reframing is about being able to turn negatives into positives or problems into opportunities. Being willing and able to think positively and reframe negatives are essential for creative problem solving. Metaprograms, Chapter 15. There are some metaprograms that are more geared toward creative problem solving. For example, options, global, differences, and proactive. Therefore, choose people who exhibit a sufficient amount of these traits. Summary. This chapter has indicated the key NLP techniques that would be useful in a wide variety of work activities and situations. Having listened to this chapter, you can refer to the companion PDF of this chapter when you would like a quick reminder of which NLP technique to use. Appendix B. Choosing an NLP training course. This appendix outlines the range of NLP training courses available to you should you wish to learn about NLP in a live training environment. This range extends from introductory, non-certified workshops through to the highest level of qualification in the NLP field, Master Trainer. Background. It is important to be aware that there are different approaches to training NLP. There are several NLP bodies, and there are some significant variations between them in terms of style of delivery of training, approach to ethics and ecology, length of training required for certification, course syllabus, the number of trainers required to certify students. At the time of writing, there is no unique set of standards or governing body, although there is a recognition amongst several of the leading NLP bodies worldwide of the need for collaboration in setting standards. This appendix initially describes non-certified courses and then briefly describes the various courses that lead to qualification. Introduction courses and other non-certified courses. Introduction courses typically range from a half day through to 2 days and can be general courses or specialize in specific areas, for example, NLP for selling or NLP for managers. Other non-certified courses may be longer and go into more depth about a particular aspect of NLP, for example, NLP and sport or modeling using NLP. Often these courses are for people with some previous NLP training, and this is usually made clear in the course marketing material. Certified courses. There are 5 main levels of certification. In order of hierarchy, these are Diploma, Practitioner, Master Practitioner, Trainer, Master Trainer. Neither Diploma nor Practitioner courses require any previous NLP experience, whereas the other 3 levels require delegates to be certified to the previous level. When thinking about the different levels of qualification, you might find it useful to bear in mind the 3 key benefits of NLP described in Chapter 1. Improving communication, changing thinking, attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs, replicating excellence. NLP Diploma. Diploma courses last 20 to 30 hours, normally over 3 or 4 days, and include most of the topics covered in the first 12 chapters, apart from most of Chapter 7 on language, which is left to practitioner level, and in Chapter 14. The topics are not always covered in as much depth as in this audiobook. These courses are useful for people who want to gain a solid grounding in improving communication and in some of the aspects of changing behaviors. These courses are mainly aimed at people who want to use NLP to help themselves and possibly colleagues deal with relatively minor challenges. Some NLP training businesses treat the diploma as a foundation for the NLP practitioner course. NLP practitioner. Although there are many differences in the duration and structure of practitioner courses, the content of courses is broadly similar in that they cover most of the diploma content, more of the techniques for changing behaviors and beliefs, and further language skills. Because of the different durations and structures of practitioner courses, the practitioners from these courses will have varying degrees of ability and experience in dealing with situations and challenges faced by their clients, should they wish to use NLP in a business coaching or consulting capacity. If you choose to become an NLP practitioner, make sure that the course suits your requirements. Some sources of information to help you choose the right NLP course are provided at the end of this appendix, together with a brief summary of the points. Equally, if you're using the services of an NLP practitioner at work, you might wish to ensure that they are suitably trained and qualified to meet your requirements. NLP Master Practitioner. Master Practitioner courses build on the content taught at practitioner level. Practitioner certification is a prerequisite for master practitioner courses, and cover new material regarding communication and language, changing behaviors and beliefs, and modeling. These courses usually provide deeper levels of personal development. The courses broaden and deepen students' capability to facilitate change work with other people. Though the syllabus of practitioner courses is relatively similar across the different NLP training bodies, the content of master practitioner is more varied. As with practitioner courses, master practitioners will have different degrees of ability and experience, depending on the type of course they have attended. Similar considerations apply for choosing a master practitioner course as for choosing a practitioner course, and for organizations using the services of NLP master practitioners. It is important to note that, although practitioners and master practitioners may run training courses and workshops, only certified trainers are able to certify students as diploma holders, practitioners, or master practitioners. NLP Trainer and Master Trainer. NLP trainers have met the criteria of a certified trainer's training, which is open only to master practitioners. They are able to certify people at the level of diploma, practitioner, and master practitioner. Trainers' training courses will vary in terms of content and duration, typically ranging from 7 days to 19 days, including evaluation. Generally, an effective NLP trainer's training course will teach students how to run NLP courses and how to teach and certify at NLP diploma, practitioner, and master practitioner level, teach students excellent presentation skills, thoroughly test their knowledge of NLP. A typical and thorough evaluation process lasts 3 to 4 days. Normally, to become a master trainer, you will have been a certified trainer for several years, have run several practitioner and master practitioner courses, and have made a significant contribution to the NLP field. Only master trainers can certify NLP trainers and other master trainers. Summary of considerations when choosing a course. Whichever type of course you choose, it is recommended that you satisfy yourself that the course will provide you with what you want from it. Here are some considerations you might want to take into account. Reputation and qualifications of the trainer or trainers. Duration of the course. Style of the course, such as modular or block, pre-course study, or all face-to-face. Number of qualified assistants available to answer questions, observe, and give feedback during exercises. Standing of the body or board that recognizes the course. Pass rate. If everyone always passes, what is the qualification worth? Process and standards for certification. Size of the training course. 5, 50, or 500 delegates. Follow-up support available. Specialist subjects covered by the course, such as sport, business, personal development, health. Number of trainers required to certify students. Many schools specify 2. Both www.thelazarus.com and www.anlp.org contain free guides to choosing an NLP course. The Association of NLP is the main NLP body in the UK. Contact the author or visit www.thelazarus.com for further details and updated information about NLP training and the different certified courses available.
This has been a Gildan Audio production. For more affordable life-changing audio programs, visit our website at gildanmedia.com.